She takes the blame. She covers the shame. Removes the stain.
All right, we're back. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Drew Marshall Show. We are in season 16, and after 16 seasons, we've decided to end the Drew Marshall Show. June 29th will be our last show, so we're counting down. I think we're, what, so this is show 7?
Counting
seven,
down
seven,
and
seven
ramping
away.
Up.
Can you say it again with your...
Counting cool? down and ramping up.
Wow. Thank you, Venus Flytrap. Listen, some news this last week. We lost two previous guests on the show in 1 week. Rachel Held Evans was 37 years old and had been on the show a few times. And so after this next interview, we are going to pay tribute to Rachel by interviewing her friend Sarah Bessie. But we also lost Jean Vanier this week. He was 90 years old. Born 1928, by golly. Philosopher, writer, religious, and moral leader, founder of Communities for People With and Without Intellectual Disabilities. I like that. Founder of Communities for People With and Without Intellectual Disabilities. And above all, a follower of Jesus, a peacemaker. When I think about peacemakers, like honestly, his face comes right to the forefront. He had one of the most... gentle smiles, gentle and joyful. Like, I don't want to overplay this. We always do this when people pass. We tend to make them sound better than they were, but I think this guy was actually better than he was.
That's why I chose that song,
make any
Grace.
Sense?
No, it's why I chose that song, Grace, because that's definitely one of the things I think about when you mention the name Jean Vanier, just the way he was so grace-filled and graceful with people that many of us don't give the time of day to.
Yeah.
And are afraid of and judge and all these things. He just was, and people like you and me who are quote unquote normal, he was very grace filled with us as well.
He was one of your all time favorite guests on the show.
Yes, he was. Yeah. A couple of French sounding people.
What?
Monsieur Dallaire.
Oh, right. Romeo Dallaire and Jean Vanier. Apparently, you got a thing for French people.
That they are wonderful, huh? They're full of the grace, huh?
Well, let's go to. A couple of people who can talk about Jean Vanier better than Tim and I can, that's for sure. First of all, Sister Sue Mosteller is on the line with us. And Sister Sue, well, the last time I saw her, we were at a Henry Nouwen, I don't know, tribute night or something.
Retrospective.
No, but I got up on stage to interview somebody, and I looked down, and Sister Sue was there. And I said, Sister Sue's here. Fantastic. Boy, that woman, what an incredible woman. But she scares me. And she joins us again on the show. She's been on a couple of times. Sister Sue, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Drew.
You would be, let's see if I can get this right. You are over 50 years old, over 60 years old, maybe. Is that right?
Maybe 86.
Are you kidding? Are you really 86 now?
I'm 86.
A friend of Jean Vanier, obviously we need to start the conversation by saying, I'm sorry that you've lost your friend. We, for those of you in the inside, you knew that he was failing, and so it didn't come as a surprise, I'm sure, did it?
No, it was no surprise. We were following him, and he was following us. We were able to send lots of messages. There were people surrounding him, and he was very grateful for the message. And then just last week, I think it was on Friday, he wanted to get a message, but he couldn't talk very well, but they were able to decipher his message, and he sent a message to all of us around the world, and he said this, I'm deeply peaceful and trustful. I'm not sure what the future will be, but God is good, and whatever happens, it'll be the best. I'm happy and give thanks for everything. My deepest love to each one of you. That was the message.
Wow. Wow.
So that was very beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, let's bring another voice in, another gentleman on the line with us, Dr. Michael W. Higgins. Of course, he is known as Distinguished Professor of Catholic Thought at Sacred Heart University and author of a Vanier biography called Jean Vanier, Logician of the Heart. What a great subtitle.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Dr. Higgins, when I posted that you were on the show, I had a bunch of people contact me, and I didn't know I had that many Catholic friends. Boy, are you you're kind of a big deal in the world of Catholicism. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. You're very kind.
I am very kind. I should be less.
And good looking too.
Dr. Higgins, when you were doing this book on Jean Vanier, obviously people would want to know, well, how much time did you spend with him? Did you spend more with him as a result of writing this, or did you already know him that well before?
Well, we weren't intimate friends in the way that Sue and Jean were. They knew each other for years, of course, and were very close. I knew him at some distance, actually. We had befriended around the time I invited him to be part of a day at Waterloo, at the University of Waterloo, St. Jerome's University. I was vice president there at the time, and in Ontario. And he came and he spoke to the university students, but he also spoke to the high school students. And I was responsible for introducing him. And I remember being really rather alarmed by the fact that, of course, he spoke very softly, and we had 900 high school students crammed into a neo-Gothic church, and I thought, holy crap, how are we ever going to hear this guy? But he got up, and within about a second, he managed to send out a powerful presence that silence was important and you should listen to him. He never raised his voice. He didn't really actually use the microphone, and he spoke in an unartificial way, no technological props or anything like that, and you could hear the proverbial pin drop. And I thought, this is really extraordinary. It's living charisma, and the students and the faculty were spellbound. Now, he had been very kind. He had written to me a note indicating that he was really quite pleased with a biography I had written about somebody who was influential in his life, a man by the name of Thomas Merton. And there had been a French edition of my biography, and he had taken the time to write for me quite meaningfully. And then latterly, I ended up writing about him and his work in the Literary Review of Canada and in Commonweal magazine in the United States. And then we met again, and this time it was at his home in Trottier-Breuil, and Sister Sue was instrumental in helping to arrange for that meeting. And it was at that time that I mentioned to him that I had been approached by my publisher to write a biography of him, and he was quite indifferent to it, to tell you the truth. He really was not interested in it. I mean, he's rather egoless, which is very rare for people who have celebrity status, and he was really more concerned about a book about the movement, about L'Arche itself, about the community, not about him. And I said that although I did appreciate and understand his prioritizing, the publisher was really interested in a book about him. He never put any hurdles in the way. He was cooperative, and he was supportive, but, you know, he was indifferent to it. And I think that indicates a level of liberty and freedom in his life, that he wasn't interested in... he was never interested in spin, of course, or empty rhetoric, but he wasn't interested in encomia or biographies that were laudatory. I think he was always interested in the simplicity and the beauty of truth itself, and that speaks, I think, volumes to the man.
Well, Dr. Higgins, how did you find out that Jean had finally passed?
Well, pretty well the same way Sister Sue had, through the network. But it was interesting because it was a friend of mine who is a former priest but an Ignatian director directing a retreat in Gloucester, Massachusetts, who actually sent the message out early in the morning. He's an early riser, and he got the message very early, and he alerted me to it, and then I alerted my editor at the Globe and Mail, because, as you know, you're in the media, when something like this happens, they always want something in the can in advance, right? So they don't want to be scrambling at the last minute. So I had written something for them a week or a week and a half earlier, so it was just a matter of activating the file.
Sister Sue, what is the common denominator... And by the way, you can't say Jesus. What is the common denominator between Nouwen, Merton, and Vanier?
I'd say it's probably the desire and the effort to live a life of that's related to the heart as well as the mind.
Ooh. Yeah. Because I've been struggling with how these three only really impacted me after after my soul was finally to engage both my heart and mind. And so you just absolutely nailed that for me. That was so. As far as Jean is concerned, you know, we all have this image of the gentle giant. Please tell me you saw him lose his cool at least once.
Can't remember. I can't remember. No, my memory isn't that good. So may have happened, but I was with him a lot, and he was quite peaceful actually, and not rattled too quickly. He had a depth of wisdom and integrity, and trust that I think just kind of supported him through his life, so that he didn't need to. He didn't need to correct. He didn't need to tell people they were wrong. He had no need to argue. He had no, those things were sort of not on his agenda. He was a man who cared and who trusted and trusted God, but he also trusted all of us. And I think that was part of the legacy that he'll leave us. Yes.
Sure. By the way, when was the last time you two spoke, Sister Sue and Dr. Higgins?
We speak periodically. We have breakfast and a little bit of a dive on Broadview Avenue there. And we occasionally work together. In fact, we have something coming up within a couple of weeks. We're going to be spending several days at the University of British Columbia.
Okay.
And in the Archdiocese of Vancouver doing work on, not on Jean, actually, mostly on Henry, but on some related topics as well. So we get together fairly often in the course of a year.
Tell you what, that's a breakfast I would love to just kind of eavesdrop in on and hang out. I want to hang out with you two.
You can drop in as long as you cover the bill. Sister Sue's a big eater. I mean, cover the cost here.
Oh, this is good. This is good.
No, I understood your question to be when was the last time we saw John Vanier. If that was your question, October.
Okay, well, that is a good question. Yeah, so you saw him in October. That was the last time you saw Jean,
correct.
And you were obviously over there.
I was, yeah.
Why, Sister Sue, I don't even know how to ask this. Jean Vanier, people know the name. They know the name, but they don't know why they know the name. And I want to know from you, what is it about Jean Vanier that has penetrated demographics, age groups, cultures, there is something about what he's done. So we've talked about what a nice guy he is and soulful and peaceful and patient and, you know, that kind of stuff. But what he has done has somehow penetrated and resonated with our culture. Why has it penetrated and resonated through so many cultures and so many demographics? What is going on with what he's done?
Well, you know, he wrote a book, or he gave some lectures in Toronto, and then a book came out of it called Becoming Human. Mm-hmm. And I suggest that this man had a very profound integrity, really. He was very thoughtful. He also had a very sensitive heart. And he allowed these things to, I would say, influence his not only his life, but his choices as he went along. And so we have someone who realized that he wasn't very interested in going up the ladder and getting a lot of wealth and prestige. That was not something that for him would have fulfilled him, because his heart had a sense that it wasn't there. And it took him quite a long time. I think he was in his mid-30s by the time he began L'Arche. It took him a long time to find what was the place for him in this world where he could make his life fruitful for others and in the face of God. And so he tried the seminary. That didn't work. He was in the Navy and realized that he didn't want to make war. He wanted to make peace, so he left the Navy. He was in a community in Paris that was doing some studies on spiritual matters and so on, and that was very influential for him. But he prayed, he listened, he talked to people, And then there was a moment when he saw these two, he saw a room with 80 men in the room who had disabilities in a large, large institution in France, just wandering around, sitting on the floor, knocking their heads against the wall, some talking, some doing nothing. And they had nothing to do all day, and this was their life every day. And a couple of them came up to him, you know, and just right away realized that he was ready to engage with them. They said, hello, my name's so-and-so. And John said, right away, we started a conversation, and he realized how much these people wanted to have an encounter with people who would recognize them as being fully human. And so he was very, very moved by that one meeting, and he went back, he prayed, he listened, he talked to people. And then he made this very, very radical decision, went to the authorities and asked if he could welcome the two men that talked to him on the, and in those days they were a little looser than they are today, and they allowed him. He said, I knew this was an irrevocable decision, that I could never go back on this, because if I decided I didn't like it, they would have to go back to that life. So he knew what he was doing. He bought a little house, they started to live together, and then he just discovered they were having such a good time and having fun. And his friends came from the University of Toronto in the summers, and just to see him, and to, because he had taught them, and they wanted to stay. And so gradually this thing began to expand. People said, I want to do this too. This is human. This is really, really beautiful. And I am not just discovering that I have gifts, but I'm discovering that I'm receiving gifts from people that I never expected.
Yeah.
So you had this human mutuality between gift and vulnerability, which was exchanged and is exchanged in mutuality. And I think we're all longing to be loved as well as to love others. And I think that's kind of the underpinning of it all.
What a brilliant summary, Sister Sue. Wow.
Thank you.
That was... Dr. Higgins, we don't need you anymore. Goodbye.
Oh, I left 5 minutes ago.
Oh,
I've got to the breakfast place.
Yeah, we'll see you there.
I'm holding the table.
Dr. Higgins, what is it? And we'll finish with you on this, and then we're going to play a brief snippet from my interview with Jean Vanier from, I think it was back in 2011. Dr. Higgins, what is it that people, because you did the biography, what is it that people don't get about Jean Vanier?
Well, I think in a way it's this. You know, he was a man of words, but he was a man of very careful words. He wasn't into speechifying. And we live in a culture that is largely sick of words. We don't believe them anymore. And now we have, of course, reached a point of corruption in language, where everything is fake news, everything is subject to doubt and scrutiny. Nothing can be accepted as trustworthy. This is an appalling situation. It's been happening for a few decades, and we've reached its consummation. It is important to recognize that, in a sense, the antidote to this excessive language, and it is an excess that's meaningless because it's words piled upon words. You have somebody like Vanier, and earlier now, and Merton is in a slightly different situation because he's a more cerebral poet, yes, essayist, yes, kind of guy, but they all had one thing in common, and that was the clarity of language. Jean's prose is easily accessible. And in fact, in all the letters that he wrote, in the various documents that he sent out outlining the mission of L'Arche, and in the several books that he published throughout his life, there is an impressive and transparent simplicity. In fact, they're not complex books. They carefully weave an argument that's already present and is present in his life. That is the integrity that you find when language is used, cleansed of deception, when you encounter the beauty that is truth, and that's predicated on the power of trust, and everything seen within the larger context of community or communion, to give it more theological flavor. Because Jean wasn't an egotist, And he wasn't someone who lived as a pioneer on his own. He understood from the outset that community was essential to being human, being fully human. And also essential for that is an exchange in language which is both meaningful and in the end has about it the beauty of simplicity.
Wow.
So that's what I would say is important to either capture for the first time or to recapture in terms of the legacy of Jean Vanier.
Wow. Now I really want to go to breakfast with you guys. Sister Sue, I first met you at L'Arche, Richmond Hill, back in a time where I discovered about L'Arche too late. I grew up in Marshall Funeral Home on Yonge Street, just down the street from L'Arche.
Absolutely, yeah.
And my dad knew you. My dad knew Henry. Henry Nouwen was the priest. Like, I went... When I ran away from home, I ran away to the sort of area around the Catholic Church, you know, when I was a kid. But I didn't know anything about Henry Nouwen at that time, of course, and nor did I know anything about L'Arche. And this was right in my backyard. And so to visit Daybreak, to go to the Friday evening service, I've said this a few times lately, and I think it might be the stage of life I'm in. There have been a few things that have ended up, as I think back, being a pebble, my spiritual shoe. You know what I mean? And Sister Sue, you have been part of that whole process. You are irritating my soul. Thank you.
Anytime.
And Dr. Higgins, I want to apologize for taking 16 years to reach out to you to have you on the show. I wish I'd done that so much earlier. Distinguished professor of Catholic thought at Sacred Heart University, author of the Vanier biography, Jean Vanier, Logician of the Heart. What a pleasure to have both of you. We're going to play a little clip from my interview with Jean right now. But to both of you, thank you for loving a guy that I wish I had the opportunity to have, you know, immersed myself into his life a little bit more like you has. I'm very jealous of both of you for the time you spent with Jean Vanier. So to both of you, thank you for being part of this tribute to this man. Thank you both.
It's a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Sue. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye, Michael. Ladies and gentlemen, a little clip from my interview with Jean Vanier. Mr. Vanier, what a pleasure. What an honor it is. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for calling me.
As you heard that intro, is there any part of you that sort of sat back and cringed a little? And
I don't know.
I mean, if you have any Canadian in you, you don't like long intros.
Not too long, and life is more simple than that. And as I say, well, and what you said, it's just to live everyday life and learn to love people and to learn to understand them and so on. So what you said is essentially true. The difficulty is when you make a long introduction, people think it's really, you know, it's good that he's doing it, but we don't do it. The reality is that life is simple, and to live in L'Arche is a simple reality, and we just learn to love each other. And there's something gone wrong in society, which, as you say, is just looking for power and success. Well, in reality, the most important thing is just to learn to love each other, and that is the road to peace.
Well, look, this interview came about as a result of me going to Massey Hall in Toronto a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday night. It was a bit of a fundraising event, and there was the Toronto Symphony Orchestra on stage. There was Steve Bell on stage. There was Mike Jansen, Tim Huff, of course, many others, Valerie Pringle. But Steve Bell set up this one song, and he said, I was in Poland, and I went to visit Auschwitz, and I came back, and I was broken, and I wrote this song. And he was talking about Hitler and one of the first group of people that Hitler decided to exterminate were the disabled. So he set this song up, and the string section starts in, and they were playing sort of these minor chords that just transported you over to the Eastern Bloc, and you were there. I mean, emotionally, you were there. And I was sitting in the second row, and all of a sudden, out the left side of my eyes. Now, you've got to understand something, Mr. Vanier. I didn't want to be there that night.
Uh-huh.
I'm tired of going to these fundraisers and conferences, and I mean, I'm just sick to death of it all. So I was in a bad mood. I was tired. I sat down, and tried to smile my way through the evening. The music was quite lovely. But then all of a sudden, when the song is playing out the corner of my eye on the left, this lady comes out pushing another person in a wheelchair, and they come to the center of the stage. The spotlight hits them, and they begin to dance together. And my first thought, honestly, Mr. Venya, was, oh, is this an actor? Is this someone sitting in a chair, bending their hands in a sort of a tortured way, and drooling on themselves? Someone's acting. They must be acting. No, they're not acting. And then I realized the person was developmentally challenged, or whatever the word is these days, and they were real. And I thought, how dare they use someone to manipulate our emotions like this? And then 7 seconds later, I was weeping like a little girl. There was something so beautiful in that moment, and I've got a really cold heart these days, Mr. Vanier, very cold, that it just broke me open, and I was just sobbing. And it was as though this lady who was dancing with the gal in the wheelchair, it was as though she was they were both celebrating life together.
Well, that's, I think, the secret. They could have been the spirit movers from Daybreak. I don't know. That's what it is to learn to celebrate and to have fun together, to dance together, and just everybody just as they are. And I find that people who are maybe in wheelchairs, maybe they can't do a lot of things, but they have this fantastic capacity to relate and to love and to have fun together. Because I think this is the big challenge for humanity. Can we get together? Can we let the barriers that separate people fall down? If we can move from the place of fear and the place of prejudice and compulsions, just to welcome people and discover how beautiful they are, beautiful they are. And each one of us are the same. One of the gifts of those people you were looking on the stage at Massey Hall is that they know they're limited. They're in wheelchair, they can't do this and they can't do that. Unfortunately, a lot of people in our society think they are illimited. But in reality, we're all limited. We all have our handicaps. We all have our difficulties to relate. We're all a little bit frightened of the future. And maybe life is more simple than that. It's about creating community where we can welcome each other, where we can particularly welcome those who feel lonely. And in our society, where there's a lot of accentuation on doing well and be a success and be powerful, we're just forgetting that the essential thing is to relate. And when we're just wanting to be individualistically powerful, what we're forgetting is there are a lot of people who can't make it now.
All right, man, I feel horrible about interrupting there. And I realize that I rattled on too much in that interview.
You never rattled.
Stop it. Should have been more about Jean Vanier. If you want to listen to the rest of that interview, please go to drewmarshall.ca and, of course, throw his name into the search engine and you will find it. It'll take you right to that interview. The man schooled me big time that day.
I distinctly remember that interview. Oh, yeah.